bit about what we're doing this morning. I've got an interesting task in that my topic is unbiblical goals, and then next week Tom is doing biblical goals. He gets the white hat, I have the black hat. So my job this week is to make a big mess, and then Tom's going to come along with a big shovel next week and fix everything. This week is chapter 5 in this book. You've already had the sales pitch. I won't give you another one. But then read chapter 6 for next week. Format this morning is going to be a little bit different. I'm going to talk for a little bit. It has been threatened that I'm going to do a chalk talk with Dry Mark, but that's not really true. I'm going to talk for a little bit, introduce the topic, and then we're going to divide up and do group work. divide into four groups, and y'all are going to caucus for 10 minutes, and then we will have group reports. And I was going to offer a grade, you know, you get so many muffins for the best report, but I think those got pretty hard hit during the break. So we'll just operate on self-esteem or something. We're talking today about goals for parenting and how we go amiss. We, I think, can stipulate at the front end that nobody sets out, I'm going to be a lousy parent. I'm going to see how messed up I can make my kid. Having said that, there are no shortage of kids who could have had better upbringing. And so somewhere in there, there's a mismatch. What we find, though, is that we can tell a lot about goals not by coming up and asking someone, what are you trying to do with your kid? But observing what they're doing. The book uses example of a three-year-old girl in a parade. What's this mother trying to prove, in essence? So we will take that approach with things this morning. In the handout, I have likened parenting to the metaphor of a trip and navigating the trip. And I will continue that somewhat this morning. I don't know how visible it is and that we don't have great stage lighting here. This is, by the way, a multimedia presentation. I have both Dry Mark and flip charts this morning. And I hope you're as proud as I am. But my chalk talk is of the Netherlands countries, rural Netherlands. These little things are small towns. This, for those of you in the back, is a windmill. The red dots you may see up here are tulips. But navigation in the Netherlands 500, 1,000 years ago is pretty straightforward in that the land is very flat. And you have these towns, and in the middle of each town is a church. And I love the symbolism of this. In going, the paths now roads between towns, basically, you set out from the town and you look at the church spire, and that church spire guides you to where you're going. Very straightforward, the town's 4 or 5 miles apart. Hard to get lost. You keep your eye, if you will, on the cross on the top of the church spire, and you'll get where you're going. Well, that works for 5 or 6 miles. The windmill didn't get paths, by the way. That works on land and for short distances. But when you're going further, you don't have the advantage of landmarks in quite the same way. For a time when I was in the service, I lived on an island in Portugal. And Portugal, if you'll hearken back to your school days, was the home of Prince Henry the Navigator, and that was a big deal. They would say, you sent men to the moon, we had Prince Henry the Navigator, and serious about boat navigation. And these Portuguese fishermen would go out in a boat about the size of two of our banquet tables, 20-foot boat, wooden boat, homemade sail, out of the sight of land, and they're doing the whole thing with sometimes called pilotage or dead reckoning. They're carrying their landmark with them. It's called a compass. Those guys were good, but I wouldn't dream of going out for 3 days in a wooden boat out of the sight of land like that. But they would do it, and invariably they came back. In the little handout, if you have had a chance to read it, if you read it at home, I won't ask for a show of hands. Have a little story there of Amelia Earhart and her disappearance in the Pacific, and I think it was 1937. A little bit about how that form of airplane navigation works. Do we have any former Boy Scouts here go around with a compass? No one willing to admit it. You take a heading with a compass, and this is an expensive compass, and it has 2-degree marks on it, but they're little tiny things, and you get in an airplane, especially a small plane, not a 747 or whatever. That thing's bouncing around, and the compass is jumping around, and what sounds very simple on the ground becomes quite a challenge when you get in the air. Well, we have a goal out here. That's our goal. That's an X. And this represents a mess. This is plus or minus 2 degrees, 4 degrees spread. And that, if you're trying to go somewhere with a compass, that sounds pretty exact. But over 60 miles, you've got a margin of error of 4 miles in there. And then you go another 60 miles, and you're building on that margin of error. And it keeps getting, margin of error keeps getting bigger and bigger. We're overshooting our goal here. But at this point, we're out, 180 miles, and our margin of error is about 15 miles one way or the other, and that's good. That's not too precise. And basically, that was the problem that Amelia Earhart encountered. They got too far out of things. So there are some things, and we will talk at the end about a little more about navigation and some things that we might be able to do so that our circle of uncertainty doesn't keep expanding out of control. But this is a little navigational checklist for parenting. Not meant to be exhaustive by any means, but some things that we can look for as we observe what someone is doing and seeing if they're on course. And I've just listed 4 of these. There are more, I'm sure. But we have, and it's in your handout, "My yoke is easy, my burden is light." What does that tell us? Sometimes, well, this is the opposite of, if you will, no pain, no gain. Let's make the kid miserable so that they know what's going on, know who's boss here. Parable of the talents. Are we developing the child? Is there an upward focus? Upward being, if you will, standing for, are we looking to the Lord? Have we read the book of Revelation? Do we know that everything turns out all right? Do we have an optimistic bent? Or are we just always in a wad about the daily news cycle? Are we teaching our children? Are we just letting life happen? And are they passive? So, not trying to steal any thunder from next week, but as we look at the various courses that parents can take, these are things that can keep us on track. Landmarks, the Dutch countryside, is an example of a more certain form of navigation because we're not having to extrapolate. But even with that, even when we think we're on top of things, need to be careful. How many of you have been to the Seattle Space Needle? Okay. Have any of you been there before 1987? It was there 20 years before. Okay. June of 1987 is an important date with the Seattle Space Needle because they moved it 312 feet to the southwest. Physically, it stayed where it had always been, but on the government got to looking at the maps and said, "My heart, we stuck that thing in the wrong place. It's what, 500 feet high?" And they missed the mark by 312 feet. So, landmarks, and that's neat because it works with the church metaphor. It's not a church, it's a secular object. They misplaced it. But we have to be careful of what we have our eye on. And so we will look at some things today where we might go astray. My lovely assistant. Yeah, this is good. Oh no, we're gonna go over here. Can you all see this? We're going to divide into groups and talk about four different, if you will, goals of parenting. These would not be goals that someone would advocate. My goal is to set out and be a lazy parent. Maybe on Sunday afternoon, but not generally. But four approaches to parenting. A little bit of explanation. The first one, alienation. The PAS stands for parental alienation syndrome. This is something that comes up like in divorce, custody battles, one parent trying to turn the other parent against one against the other. There's a cartoon a number of years ago, family circus sort of thing, although it wasn't that, but family piling into the car. And the wife is saying to the husband, "I've got an idea." Everybody was in their Sunday best and all of that. Wife says, "I've got an idea. Next week, you can get the kids ready for church, and I'll sit in the driveway and blow the horn." A subtle form of alienation, and you could argue in that which is the worst, the husband or the wife. he for doing it, she for saying it in front of the kids. But in essence, kids, I want you to know that I'm the good parent, okay? And if there are any problems in this house, she'll deal with me later. So that's what we're talking about with the first. And the others, laziness. Since all of our elementary teachers, I think, around spring break, you know, Eeyore is a character in Winnie the Pooh that's everything's always sad and awful and poor me. But what I'm going to propose to do here is divide down the middle and then front and back. This side of the church is always a little more populated, which harkens back, I think, to the days before, well, back when we just had a windbag in the front and not across the top. But but for those of you more recently, this side of the church used to be real cold because the air would, gale force winds would come across and land against that wall. But at any rate, some of you folks on the upwind side might want to migrate across the aisle. But in essence, divide the room just as this is, this front corner, which is fairly sparse, alienation, back end, egotism, laziness in front, and authoritarianism in the back. But particularly if some of y'all could gravitate this way, and you will have approximately 10 minutes as a group to discuss your brand of negative parenting, and then we will have 4 5-minute reports. Those, and I will be fairly authoritarian on the 5-minute thing, because typically what happens in those things is everybody wants to do a little better than the group that went before, and you have creeping whatever. So we will try to hold it for 5 minutes. And the group report, a little more multimedia for you here. This is, and not rigorous, but, you know, we're talking about X and some examples of what it looks like. Can you see? Some examples of what it looks like. And having described it, that's nice. Can we predict it? What would be the causes? Could we have seen this in someone before? Could I have seen this in my spouse? Would Connie have known what she was dealing with 30 years ago, 40 years ago? Could it be foreseen in singles or pre-kids, whatever? And then what can we say about course correction? Are there things that we can do if we have one of these problems? What does the Bible have to say? So a little corrective perspective on that. And I would also say with these subject areas, and Connie and I will circulate. She knows who we had in mind when we came up with these labels. And none of those people are in this body. But in terms of what are you talking about, if we can help you with that, we will. Do y'all have a vision for this? Should I appoint somebody as sort of the precinct organizer for each of these groups, or okay. All right, Jamin has volunteered. Okay, John Bastoni. He's, yeah, authoritarian. You want to organize all of them? John Ellis, would you be so kind as to organize it? And this does not mean give the report necessarily. You can. The report can be given by anyone. You get extra points if it's female on time limit. Single, whatever. Jonathan, would you? John King? And Tom, if you would organize this. And so just kind of stay where you are. The microphone here in the middle should be hot. And does group number one have a spokesperson? Come, go to the microphone because now the tape is rolling. Isn't it, Joel? You turn, we're back on.
Our group was clearly putting a lot more effort into this than the rest of you. And I just thought you really should try to carry the weight that you are responsible for around here. We thought that anything that was divisive behavior, anything that put one person at a disadvantage in the family. So there were a lot of expressions of this kind of echo. But that dad says, maybe treats mom like one of the kids. There were examples of physical abuse cited where one of the children was picked on by the dad more than the other kids, and even the siblings start to alienate one of the children. Please throw in your ideas here because I can't read all of these. We said that gossip inside the family, mom talking about dad in a way that is not pleasing to the Lord around the kids would be an example of that kind of divisive behavior. And basically we felt like anything that wasn't direct, kind confrontation was going to alienate. So things that would, let's see here. Basically showing disrespect within the marital relationship or within the family. I wish I'd been the one taking notes. No, come on up. No, I don't know. I just was wanting some more input. I forgot what we talked about. Well, predictability? So, yes, it's predictable. We said, we talked about if you grew up this way, were you more likely as a single person to act manipulatively toward your friends? Were you going to imply that they didn't love you as much as you love them, or they didn't want to spend time with you? Do you talk in a way that's gossipy? Are you inclined to shift blame or act in a way that's sort of passive-aggressive, where you imply your annoyance, but you really don't address the cause of that inside the family or in personal relationships? Withdrawal, insecurity, how do you state those? Do you talk that way? Do you relate that way as you were growing up? Did your parents do that to you? Then you're probably likely to take that into your family. Do you just avoid problems? Do you go into your room and sulk rather than having the difficult confrontation and resolving it? Course correction? Okay, so we ran out of time. But, Becky had a very good point. She said the course correction here looks like Ephesians. It's husbands, love your wives, and wives, respect your husbands. And it seemed like those were the common threads in the failure that, a lot of times when we were citing examples, it was the wife talking about the husband negatively in front of the children, oh, dad doesn't do this, he's not interested in that, he's too hard. Or we even talked about a false form of advocacy where mom sort of entreats for the kids to dad because he's sort of harsh, he's unkind, but maybe mom can get him to do something for the family that that he wouldn't do directly for the children, and so she's a go-between, and they don't relate directly to him. But I think the Ephesians 5, is it chapter 5? Yeah. Husbands, love your wives, and wives, respect your husbands, and then that will translate into the relationship with the children.
Thank you. Group 2, if they can stir themselves to do it.
Well, our group's topic was laziness, and we really couldn't think of anything. To start off from the beginning, how does this manifest itself? Main point, it would be ignoring bad behavior, not really wanting to deal with problems, they cited an example for a social blindness of a family who went to a restaurant and basically just ignored their kids the whole time, where their kids did whatever they want during in the restaurant and that kind of thing, just ignoring it because that way I don't have to deal with it. Another thing is just not doing any so-called preventative maintenance. If you're not teaching your child good things from the beginning, that's going to result in bad behavior, and then the tendency would be to not try to correct that bad behavior once it's there. That's kind of the defeatist view. Lots of giving excuses for your child's behavior, such as, he's just that way, that's just the way God made him, I can't fix that problem, that type of thing. Also, this could create a lot of conflict between your spouse and yourself. Expecting them to do the work while you're sitting on the couch eating potato chips or watching TV, that type of thing. Also mentioned, this could cause a lot of yelling in the household. If you're too lazy to get up and deal with the problem, you just that type of thing as well. Also, this shows a tendency to wrong priorities. You may not be actually a lazy person in other areas of your life, but you have prioritized your life in such a way where this is at the bottom of the list, so you don't make a concerted effort to train your child, and in that way you're being lazy as well. Also mentioned relying on other entities to correct your children, especially maybe in later years. You were lazy in the formative years, then later on you're saying, well, okay, we'll put them in a Christian school and that will make it all better, or this is church's responsibility to correct my child's behavior as well. And also we mentioned it's just as bad to ignore the good behavior that your children may exemplify. It's very important to encourage them in the good behavior that they show as well. As far as this being predictable, it actually is very predictable. I think that was the general consensus. It exemplifies itself before, in singles it could be just your own selfishness, wanting to do things your own way. Also exemplified in making excuses for yourself in many areas of life. It's always somebody else's fault, not accepting responsibilities for your own decisions. Somebody who has a tendency of doing what's comfortable for themselves all of the time. This could be a problem later. And then course action or course correction. Basically, Proverbs says to train up a child in the way he should go, and that is action in and of itself. Training is action. So just basically getting up off the couch and actually doing your job, I guess. And also, that can only happen, first, you have to change yourself, because that is a problem within yourself, your own selfishness and pride. So through prayer, also accountability with other people, ask other people, do you see this in me? And if you do, what can I do? Can you help me out? Make sure to keep me accountable for my own laziness as well.
And our title is Egotism, so we're confident that our presentation is the best. egotism. What does it look like? Maybe a demanding behavior where parents want to save face in public. That you want your children to be the best at everything. There's nothing that they aren't the best because, again, that reflects very well on you as a parent because of their excelling at these things. We are less concerned necessarily about their behavior, but we're concerned about how we react sometimes to that in public because of our egotism. You know, wow, their behavior caused us to react wrong, which made us look bad again. So is it predictable? Yes. And even in singles, the Bible talks about the proud look. A person who maybe is an overachiever themselves. Someone else mentioned a person that's a perfectionist, wants everything to be just so, and so they want their children to be just so as well. A person is very self-focused, always look at what they do, who they are, how good they are, and that sort of thing. Course correction, definitely, I think number one is humbling ourselves. 1 Peter 5, humble yourselves under the hand of the mighty God, and he will exalt you in his time. Remembering that our children are, as we were reminded just this morning, those who are weak. And so being a help to them. And then trusting God as their creator, not expecting them to excel at everything, but as their parent, recognizing their giftedness from God and cultivating that in them.
We are the legalistic group, so we will cover all 4 points in order. We'll be exactly 5 minutes. Start the stopwatch now. What does it look like? Well, it looks like in the New Testament, it looks like the Pharisees, being more concerned with the rules and the outcome of the rules than rather the hard attitude. You would rather have your kids obey now than for them to disobey now so that later on you can teach them something through it. Or you'd rather have the outcome you want now than eventually that they learn to love Christ because, you know, of course, the now, the here and now is of utmost importance. It looks like us putting our own agenda on our children, saying things like, this is good for you, I'm smarter, I'm older, I'm bigger, I'm stronger, I'm faster, whatever, but this is the way it's going to be because I'm better than you are. It can come out of egotism, which was mentioned in the other group. It can come out of different things. It can come out of our management style, the way we run every area of our lives. And it can be an effort to make us look good. It can be an effort to say, hey, we want our kids to behave because it makes us look good, because it makes us do this. So if I have all of my order, all of my life in order, it makes me look like I really got things together. It can be a focus on the rules. Sometimes we can justify it with Scripture saying, you know, I'm God's representative. I'm the head of the household. Therefore, everybody has to obey me. And I think we talked about it last week where God's the CEO, we're middle management, and the kids are, you know, the servants down there. And so I'm going to rule that way, the way management does. We asked if it was predictable. One of the things we came up with is it was kind of unique. It's not just predictable on a grand scale, so macro scale, but on a micro scale it can be predictable even from that day. My whole life was out of control. I couldn't control anything in my life today. I couldn't control anything at work. But when I get home, I can control my kids. And it becomes, this is a way for me to have some control over some aspect or area of my life. So it can be predictable in that, depending on if someone's self-centered. It can also be predictable in looking at background, on a more macro level, looking at how do my parents parent me. And what was brought up was sometimes it's the opposite. My parents are very permissive, so I'm going to be authoritarian. Or sometimes it's my parents were very authoritarian, and that's the only way I know how to be, so that's the kind of parent I'm going to be. Or it could even be a combination of the two. My parents were very authoritarian, so I'm going to be very permissive and not even knowing that, hey, everything I'm doing is still authoritarian because that's what I know. It can be grounded in our source of identity, who we are as people. Some biblical redresses to this. I think the best one we came up with was in Philippians 2, having the mind of Christ, that though he was the CEO, though he had absolute power and was the boss, he humbled himself and became the servant to many. And when dealing with your children, they are not just they're not just there because they have to go through that period until they can grow up and be adults and be useful and be profitable and be valuable. But they are there because God has placed them there, and you can teach them these messages. None of us want to have children that turn from the faith. None of us want to have children that reject our values, whether it's religious values or just social values. None of us want that. And if we're honest with ourselves, we can look at being a control freak or a legalist and say that can push our children away from the very things we're trying to do. And so having the mind of Christ and saying, look, I'm a servant to my children. Even though I'm the boss in the home, I'm still a servant to my children, even as Christ is a servant to us.
Excellent. Excellent. But you're 1 minute and 5 seconds short, John. We will forgive shortness, brevity. In terms of, and I'll try to come out here a little bit so you don't unscrew your necks, those who are facing backwards. In terms of what we can do, if you will, systemically to prevent some of these problems, going back to the navigation metaphor, there are a couple of principles of dead reckoning that make things better. One is multiple observations. And I would suggest, and I think most of you know this, that it takes two to have a kid. And I think the Lord could have done it some other way, but it takes two people to create it, and ideally two people to raise the child. I can't tell you how many times with our own children, one of us would see something and be a little troubled by it. This was not something, an in-the-book problem. And after the kids were in bed, and maybe after this had been going on for a few days, Connie and I would talk through the thing and decide what our position was on it. Because you need the perspective of two people. They tend to balance each other. And that's just really important. A fringe benefit of this, and I cannot explain it, but it's what she and I refer to as the parents have had a talk syndrome. Kids are in bed asleep. Door is closed. She and I talk about this and we say, okay, next time Michael does this, I'm going to nail him. It never happens again. Which is fine. But how many times, countless times, she and I had our talk and the behavior disappeared. And I cannot explain that other than the Lord's mercy and the Lord's intervention. So, taking two navigational readings, if you will, and trying to correct the thing. The other principle, and going back to the Amelia Earhart thing, one of the theories, and nobody knows what happened to the plane, one of the theories is they were supposed to go over an island partway to their destination, and when you sight that island, you say, oh, I thought it was going to be in front of us, and it's 3 miles to the left, so you recalculate everything. You get rid of your old circle of uncertainty and you're starting afresh from a new point. One theory is that they did that, but it was the wrong island and it sent them further askew. But if we have some fixed positions where we can take account of things, That's good in an airplane over the Pacific Ocean. How does it relate to the family? Well, I think we are a covenantal body. We have all vowed to uphold one another in the Christian walk, and that certainly applies to our children. And I think the input of our fellow believers in this body can be a form of landmark in the mouths of two or three witnesses, certainly. When the child is older than most of ours are in this group and is in a school setting, how are things there? Tanya was mentioning in eavesdropping on this circle, she deals with parents who say, well, my child would, couldn't my, you must be mistaken, my child would never do something like that. Much better to have your ears open and not pounce on the kid without any consideration, but if you're getting feedback, don't just dismiss it that they have an axe to grind, they're confused, whatever. But take that input from other people, because that can be a landmark that can recenter you and get rid of the circle of uncertainty. A campus experience might be the same sorts of things, but look for external indications that things are going well or that there are problems, and recenter your navigation on that. And the third thing I would say is read chapter 6 and be here next Sunday, and we will talk about the good aspects, the good goals, and how to accomplish them. And Brad, I think we're through.